Welcome, welcome, Housers, to a very, very special episode of On the Way Home. Today we have a panel of experts taking a look at the just released federal budget, which was really housing focused. Probably, as I think the government said, it was the biggest commitment to housing since the Second World War. We're talking about $19.5 billion over the next 5 years for housing, including the creation of 30 new purpose-built apartments. We talk all about that. We talk about what was there that we were excited about. We talk about what might not have been there. We talk about housing and homelessness. We touch on prevention and what was there and what wasn't. We talk about the need for speed and rolling this out, the need for this to last beyond the next election, and much, much more. It's a fantastic panel. And we have Tim Richter from the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness. We have Courtney from the Co-op Housing Federation Canada. We have Nick from Elliston Community Builders, Andrew from MOMFA, and Carolyn Wisman, of course, who's a brilliant researcher and author and much, much more together. And this is a group in the sector that has done so much to actually make this housing budget happen. Them and many, many of you and many more. So congratulations to you all in the sector who have, you know, for years toiled at this and pushed to have this massive investment in housing. Listen, at Blue Door, we have been pushing as well. And that's the organization I work with in the northern part of the GTA in York, Peel, and Durham. One of our programs, Construct, which launches people into the trades. Coincidentally, what we need, we actually need people desperately to build all that new housing that we're trying to build to house Canadians. And it's a program that has launched over 400 people since 2020 into the trades to do exactly that. We pushed hard in this budget and we saw it for some money to help boost trade programs. We want to take our Construct program, expand it to different provinces throughout the country to have a greater impact moving forward. We've worked with our friends at Homeward, with Jake there at Homeward to kind of push that forward. So we're excited about this announcement. But like everyone on the panel, the need for speed, it has to be there, right? And that's our next piece too. We have momentum. When we talk about this on the pod, we can't let that momentum stall. We've got to keep pushing forward. We're going to have an election coming up, and we've got to make sure that housing is right up front. That election is kind of centering around that need and affordability. And we talk a little bit about what was missing in there. Some groups that were talking about the Canadian Disability. It was announced finally, but it wasn't where people thought it could be to make a real difference. We can't really have a talk about ending homelessness. We don't talk about income. And some of those pieces were missing. But a massive investment in housing. And this wouldn't have happened without so many people working behind the scenes and without government being open to listen. We talk about the need, too, for governments to work together. It's great federally that they're doing this, but a lot of this funding is going to roll through provinces and municipalities. They all need to work together with a singular focus on ending homelessness and creating affordable housing and housing for all Canadians. And that we all can agree on. It is a power-packed, almost hour of a podcast. One of my favorites. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Let's go to that conversation now. Well, Housers, we have a very special episode of the On the Way Home podcast this week. As many of you might know, last week, federal budget dropped. And it was, I believe, these are the words of Sean Fraser, the most comprehensive set of policies we've seen since the end of the Second World War. And it was very, very exciting. There's lots of news to digest. What better way to digest it than to have experts from across the country, as we do today on our panel. So without further ado, we want to hear what our experts think. Before we do, we're going to do a slight variation of, because you've all had a chance to answer this already, because there's five of you, we're going to make it a little shorter. And that is, what does home mean to you in one word? And Carolyn, we're going to start with you.
Safety.
Beautiful. We'll go to Courtney next.
Home means rest.
Oh, nice. I haven't heard that one. That's a new one. Good. Okay. Nick?
Growth.
Tim?
Love.
And Andrew?
Family.
family. Oh, amazing. Yeah, we like put those all together. Tim, I believe that's actually Fred Victor had a shirt made. I have that shirt too. We see this is a wonderful shirt from the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness last year at the conference. Love it. Thought it was applicable for today. But I remember Jesse's shirt. It said, "Home is love." And I thought that was pretty simple too. I have that t-shirt.
Totally stole it from Jesse.
Well said. Well said. Okay, folks. So lots of news to digest last week. I know many of you have talked about this over and over again, but you all kind of represent different pieces across the country and different groups that were excited about this budget, did a lot of work up to the budget, working with the federal government, working together to push the federal government to do more to push us past the crisis we're in. So I want to hear your thoughts. The first question we're going to tackle is around housing. What did they get right? This time, I'm going to start with Andrew.
Yes. Thanks, Michael. And glad to be on the table, everybody. But I think they got a lot of things right. And I'll let everybody have a chance to chime in. But at least from the Ontario perspective, Ontario went to the table with very specific asks. And it was interesting for the first time ever. So, you know, if you want to focus history on one side, history on the next, almost all of our recommendations were in that bigger piece, right? So when we're talking about, you know, better things around construction, looking at affordability as a real thing, like not just the common dear term around affordability that they've done over the last 5 years, really talking about that community housing, affordable housing, nonprofit housing sector. I think they got those things right off the bat. So when I look at it, it was very interesting to see, wow, for the first time in a long time, a lot of the recommendations from the sector actually hit a budget or policy, because there's usually variations of it, but it's never been something that I've seen in the past where they've really taken, like almost handed over notes from everybody around this table and just put it into their recommendation. So, you know, kudos to everybody around the circle here, but they got a lot of the detailed recommendations from the sector.
Thank you, Andrew. And I think they heard a lot of those recommendations from AMFA as well. So thank you for that. It's a very comprehensive plan. If you look at $19.5 billion over the next 5 years, which is incredible. Again, when we hear numbers like that, they're very impressive, but how they're rolled out matters. So we're going to go to Courtney now. Courtney, if you just say where, introduce yourself, where you're from, and then talk a little bit about where you think they got it right.
Sure. Yes. I'm Courtney Lockhart, the Associate Director of Public Affairs and Policy at the Co-op Housing Federation of Canada. And I guess to build what Andrew was saying, the recognition of like non-market housing, nonprofits and co-ops, I think maybe was a record high for us for a document like this. So that was really exciting. I was also really happy to see some recognition that acquisition is an important method of improving or I guess protecting affordability for renters. A few years ago, the federal government was solely focused on new supply, and it was really hard to convince leaders and decision makers that there should be any other methods and things that would actually work, that we could work with the government in partnership. So I think that's a big change, and that commitment of that rental protection fund is a good sign. And yeah, I would just say in general too, though, like the political kind of inclusion of renters has changed a lot. I think we heard from our Jen Squeeze friends when the housing plan came out that like this was kind of a big deal that we're talking about generational fairness, and in that there is this like kind of inherent inclusion now of renters and the experiences of renters. So I thought that was a good thing as well.
Thank you so much, Courtney. So much of what you said was ringing true. Super excited about the acquisition fund. I had the chance to talk to Ray Sullivan from CHRA around that, and he said he was there for the announcement. I think it was $1.5 billion. They asked for $2.5. He also said the government said, can you still do 10,000 units, even though it's $1.5? And Ray said, absolutely not. It's linked to the number, but we're going to do our best. And he's looking forward to when that rolls out. It's timing is everything. Nick, let's talk about what that means for what we saw housing, like what you saw in this budget. What did they get right from the view of yourself and Ellis Don?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I think commitment to three existing programs that have been proven to be quite effective on at least at the project level, and namely that's the apartment construction loan program, last referred to as RCFI, Affordable Housing Fund, and then the Rapid Housing Initiative. Specifically with the apartment construction loan program, there were some numbers put in the budget, which was, I believe, $15 billion for 30,000 units, which is roughly about $500,000 a unit. And I think that's a good indication that they're looking at the inflationary cost, construction costing. And I think they got that number close to reasonable. And I think that that was one of the impediments of rolling out that program in the past. I think that if you went on a per unit basis, it wasn't providing sufficient funding to actually move projects forward. So I think that specifically for that program, that was good. But I think, you know, what really stands out for me is the commitment to making public lands available. I think that if we need to get to scale and capacity, to the extent we need to meet the targets for 2031, as this budget purports to do, I think involving greatly, PSPC and Canada Lands Company and working with those different government agencies to unlock the underutilized public lands for affordable housing development. I think that's a key piece. And I think if we're going to get to the numbers and the ambitions that the federal government has, that's I think that's the centerpiece of the budget from my view. Of course, this is all going to be about implementation and administration. So I note that the Apartment Construction Loan Program and Affordable Housing Fund, those aren't actually rolling out until 25, 26. So we're going to have to make do and do our best in the private and not-for-profit sectors until then with what we have. But generally speaking, I think those are pretty good tools to start with.
Well said. I have to say there's in Rouge Valley Park, which is one of Canada's biggest urban parks, if not the biggest, up in York region, and I think it goes into Toronto as well, there are 44 vacant homes owned by Parks Canada, just kind of rotting away. They're doing nothing with. So my hope is, you know, we've been talking with them for a while, and the talks for a long time were, well, this, you know, Parks Canada was just saying, well, that's just housing, it's not our business. But it's everyone's business. And I'm hoping this gives them, maybe this is the little push that they need. Carolyn, you have been talking about this all week long since the budget has been out. And I'm so grateful that you could join us and drop a little knowledge. You know, I think probably you've been doing this work a long time in many different forms, starting in, you know, in the city of Toronto, and then spent some time in Australia, which is, we found in the pod, very similar to Canada, kind of in nature and the housing needs. And now back with us, thankfully. What did you see in this budget that you really liked?
Well, if you'll indulge me for a second, Michael, I'm going to take a little bit of a historical perspective. So for 30 years, from the early 90s, the federal government was completely out of affordable housing policy, leaving it to provinces, territories, municipalities, and it didn't work. And homelessness grew, and unaffordable housing became much more of an issue. The National Housing Strategy in 2017 had very laudable targets, reducing core housing need, reducing, possibly ending chronic homelessness, according to the Prime Minister in 2020. The problem was that the programs that came out of it had nothing to do with those targets. So the apartment construction loan program was good at building purpose-built rental, but only 3% of the units were affordable to those in core housing need. The only program that seemed to be working to reduce core housing need and homelessness was the Rapid Housing Initiative, and that was a year-by-year, not a continuing program. So what excites me, I mean, at the same time, the CMHC said, oh my God, supply, we need supply for moderate and middle-income people. This housing plan is trying to bring it all together, and it seems to recognize the fact that it's not just a matter of finance, it's also a matter of land, it's also a matter of taxation, it's also a matter of the construction and labor workforce. So great, it's bringing it all together, and I love that. What's new? Interest in inflow into housing precarity and homelessness with the acquisitions fund, and also with some idea of a renter bill of rights, which is exciting to me. As well as, you know, some very concrete measures on modular on government land, returning to the tax policies that created a lot of purpose-built rental in the 50s and 60s. All of that is fantastic.
Thank you so much. And last but not least, from the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness, Tim, I know for the last year, even the fall economic statement, the Canadian Alliance, along with other partners, have been pushing, advocating. All that hard work, I think hopefully you're happy. Some of that, all that work has resulted in some great things. What did they get right?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it's been covered here. I mean, I first began working in the homelessness world in 2007. And, you know, I was thinking a bit historically, like Carolyn was, right? Thinking back to the scale of this announcement and how it fits into kind of the historical context. And I'll actually go a bit further back than Carolyn. And I think the federal government withdrawal from housing really began in 1980 when they stopped incenting the construction of new purpose-built rental. And that was, and that I think was the first step that created mass homelessness that we see today. That was the first, that was the beginning. And when I look at this budget in the context of the time since 1980, this is easily, I would say, the most comprehensive and ambitious budget and housing plan in that time, easily in that time. And it borrows on a lot of the things that we know work. Right, we know the incentives work. We know direct financing or direct funding of deeply affordable housing works. We know that low cost financing is important. Things like accelerated capital cost allowance. We know that those are tried and true strategies. There's some really cool innovations on the land side that have been mentioned here that I think are really, really important and have a lot of potential. So, you know, for me, a couple of things are really important. One, homelessness is a housing problem, right? The rise of modern mass homelessness can be traced back to what Carolyn has said and the withdrawal of federal government. So the federal government is back. The question is, you know, how do we dig ourselves out of a hole that's 40, 50 years in the making? It's going to take time. I think the other thing is, and, you know, as there are things that they've missed, and we'll talk about those in a second, but I think it's worth remembering and thinking about just the scale of the federal intervention in this case. I was talking with a colleague the other day and realized that the federal government invested more money in affordable housing, just on the affordable side, since Christmas than any government before theirs since probably the 90s, right? Or the late 80s, right? And since September, when I tallied it up, I got to nearly $55 billion in financing and direct investment, which is a huge amount of money when you consider the years before. So the scale and the ambition are there. There's some things that we would love to see them improve, but all in all, I'd say it's a terribly ambitious return of the federal government to leadership on housing.
Construct, a social enterprise by Blue Door, provides high-quality residential and commercial construction and property services in the Greater Toronto Area. More than a business with a heart, Construct is a real solution to preventing and ending homelessness. Through its 8-week paid skills trades training program, complete with wraparound supports and on-the-job work experience, Construct lifts people out of poverty and into opportunity. To hire Construct for your next project or learn more about Construct's employment program, visit constructgta.ca.
Now, you mentioned housing and homelessness and the link between that they are. Let's go to that next. Let's talk about, we saw not only announcements around housing, but we also heard the federal government talk about encampments and put funds towards giving those to communities so that they can work with the encampments so everyone can find housing. What were your thoughts around that? Were you surprised? Did you see that coming? And how does that work? Also, it's very complicated because in many ways the federal government can't directly implement that. They have to work with the provinces and the municipalities really to roll that out. Thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think Nick may have referenced this before. I think what the government has two big challenges here. One is implementation, like trying to get government land, trying to move the machinery of the federal government to free up that land and make it available for leasing and redevelopment is a massive change in the way federal governments have been doing this. So that they have a significant implementation challenge for all of their programs. The second thing is there's a lot of opposition from the provinces. And some of the provinces are frankly just being jerks about this. And they're trying to pick fights with the federal government over jurisdiction while letting people suffer. And we had been lobbying for a long time for an encampment program. And I was hoping for something that went directly to communities through reaching home, because we don't have the time for this nonsense that goes on between levels of government, right? My fear on the encampment program is a good idea, but it'll be for the winter of 2026 or 2027, you know, the time it takes to make these agreements. And I'm not clear the federal government is clear on what it'll take to resolve encampments. So I'm not sure what they're asking of the provinces. Right? My fear is an encampment program may actually fund the Edmonton Police Service, right? And their response to homelessness. But I mean, on the positive side, there's a lot of good stuff here on housing. There's extension of reaching home. There is an encampment program. There is some talk, how do we address asylum seekers and move them out of the homeless system, which would have a huge impact on homeless shelters and homeless systems across the country. All really positive. The only other critique I have is that there's actually nothing in the budget that's going to help somebody struggling to pay their rent today, right? And so all of the support for those people that are hanging on by the fingernails is 3 years out, at least 5 years out, when some of this housing gets built. But we really need to find a way to help people now while that housing gets built. And that's with, in my view, with a housing benefit of some form.
That's right. And we'll talk more about that as well, Tim, because I know the disability benefit fell far short and people are really not so happy with that. Courtney, I want to go to, Tim mentioned something there where with an acquisition fund, I think the fear was if it was government doing this acquisition fund, much like the accelerator fund, it could take 2 to 3 years to roll out. As Tim was saying, we can't wait. We need this to happen. We need affordable housing tomorrow, today. But I think it's hopeful that a group, including your organization, came together to form this fund where the hopes are they get this money to you fairly quickly. We have an example already with a BC fund that you could roll out and move this forward. But you must be really excited about the acquisition piece. Thoughts?
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yes, excited to see it actually in writing and see a commitment. But I think I've learned my lesson over the past couple of years that the budgets are just writing, and you have to get the dollars and the timeline right as well. So that speed of implementing the acquisition fund probably over the next couple of months is going to be super critical. We all know too that there's an election looming in the background, and I guess that's one of the kind of criticisms that Tim is just speaking to overall. When you look into the year-over-year allocations of all of these programs, there's not a lot for right now, and then this government is going to be challenged in an election, and then we're going to have to all readjust. So that is why we are like wanting to come together as a community housing sector to say, hey, look, in BC, they came together, the government funded an acquisition fund, and they are acquiring properties right now. And we could do the same with a federal acquisition program.
Yeah, we're excited about that. And as you said, when you're losing, I think the number, there's various numbers depending on which expert you talk to, but for every new build, 15, we're losing, right? So absolutely, you can't just be build, that's also acquire. And so I know with many land trusts as well popping up around the country, which is great. This is good news. Andrew, with your members at AMFA, you know, in talking with them, what are your thoughts around what did they miss?
Again, I don't want to call it a miss. I just think there's clarity to be had with this whole budget release. I too was very concerned when I saw the deployment of funding, and I was like, this is 3 years down the road for some of this stuff, and the community housing sector needs to get on this stuff immediately. So as Courtney said, Tim said, Nick said, like, to get this stuff going and to get to these build numbers and your target. So I think about a 2031 target. Well, every day you don't fund it, that target just keeps moving, right? And then on top of that, you're within an election cycle. Like, let's just face it, what we've got to look at with this new budget is what could be sellable pieces of the budget that could remain if, in fact, this government doesn't stay in power, right? So this is very ambitious. What is the thing, what are the portable things that says, regardless of the government, these are good ideas, these things got to stay. So I think that's a little bit of our members' appetite is, this doesn't feel like it's going to happen tomorrow, even though it's historic and it's great and has our sector written all over it. We need the funds today to get this stuff moving. And the other side of it too was proportionate share and how does this stuff get distributed. I love the BC Fund, and that's what they use as an example of funding acquisitions across the country. Well, when you get to Ontario, we have a current government that's counter to anything for that has to do with housing. So how are you going to coordinate that effort? Where does that funding go? If you start going through the federal to municipality jump, you're going to start having disparity in such a big province with such a big need. So there's got to be a coordinated effort when you start moving money down the pipeline. Again, I think speed of the funding is big for us, and coordination here in Ontario. I think those are some real question marks that still need to be answered. And then lastly, Michael, is just the math. When I looked at, I think the number was 3.1 million over that duration of time. I look at some major municipalities like Toronto with social housing weakness. I look at homelessness numbers. Like the 3.1 is almost eaten up by just one large metropolitan area. So where does that math come from to get everybody to the targets of having an affordable, safe place to live, right? So I just worry about how they equate the math and even through whatever the means are, acquisition, new build, whatever it may be. I think we're actually selling ourselves short on the number. It's way more of a aggressive number than we think it is. But again, it's a good start. I think that's what's missing, though, those three elements of the math not mathing. We need a distribution method for at least this province, because Ontario has to be able to make that funding work through to the providers. And then just the time. I just worry about if there is an upheaval in government, you could actually be back to zero, like starting point. And then now everything you thought was going to happen now gets, you know, another 10 years tacked on it. So I don't want to be talking about solving this crisis in 2040.
No. And I'll tell you something, a real kind of yesterday example. My better half, Sylvia, works at Fred Victor, and she's the director of all their emergency services. She got a call about 8 o'clock last night from one of her team that said they had a family of eight that called 311 looking for housing and was told there's nothing there and we can't help you, which of course I have to say did not sit well, and it's not the right answer, and it's not what they're supposed to do. So they found that they temporarily put that family in a hotel, but these are the pressures that we're facing. That number continues to grow. I can tell you in New York region, where we've got some great support from local mayors, including John Taylor, who heads up Housing New York, pushing hard, saying, how can we create 300 more beds or 300 more, sorry, affordable spots? That just is not an emergency. So we feel those pressures. So yeah, the need is now. We've heard that across. Nick, where do you think, you know, you can't be everything to everyone, every budget, right? And the government's already criticized for the amount of spending, the deficit. Anything missing from this budget in your mind?
Yeah, maybe I can preface my answer just by, you know, perhaps this is an answer that we'll see along the way in advancing the public lands for development. But what I would say is that with the three established programs that they've, you know, revamped, which is the apartment construction loan and the affordable housing fund and RHI, is that they all really require still nonprofit developers, indigenous groups to take significant risk in the front end to get their projects through conception, through entitlements and approvals, to shovel ready. And especially with rapid housing initiatives, the projects that will get rewarded this are the ones that are ready to go. But to get it there, 3 to 5 years of pre-development at their own risk, and you're not even sure if you're going to make it to that milestone, right? So I think that is a complete hindrance on the development, particularly in a space where even traditional private real estate developers are reticent to move on with projects. We're expecting that from our NPO sector. So what I would advance is that I think there has to be a serious canvas of, different delivery models of delivering housing. And I would frame it as this infrastructural approach to housing. You see it in Ireland, you see it now in Australia, the way that they're funding their pipeline to address their housing challenges. And I think that would really be well facilitated with the public lands use, having the government take on the responsibility to further prep their land for affordable housing development, particularly if we are investing in other innovative technologies such as modular, which are really focused on the ground up. So, I mean, like that site prep and all that kind of stuff that you would expect in traditional development. I like to see those kind of stars align because I think there's a gap to be addressed there. And it could be a very significant gap if we haven't bridged those, innovative technologies with, bricks and mortar development on public sites.
Thanks for that, Nick. I think back to what you're saying about the land and modular. Quite often, I think government, they're looking for that silver bullet. What's the one answer? And they can only carry so many things in their head at one time. And I say that, I know, Tim and others for years were hammering home housing first. They all had that lingo for a while, but that was it. If it wasn't housing first, I can't think beyond that, right? Because they've got a lot of things going on. In this budget, you see a lot of different things happening, right? They've been hurt. You've been hurt on a lot of different fronts, which is excellent, but there are some things missing. I know our friends in the Indigenous community were hoping for more, and it's a bit of a drop in the bucket. Moving forward, and we know that overrepresented across the country when it comes to affordable housing and homelessness. Carolyn, what are your thoughts on wishes that could have been in this budget but didn't appear?
Well, I guess I wish that this budget and this plan had been there in 2017. That's my wish, because at last, the federal government has realized two things, which it literally hadn't until last year. The first is the buck stops with them. As late as September of last year, the prime minister was saying that housing isn't primarily a federal responsibility. Well, guess what? Every single voter in Canada thinks that the federal government needs to take leadership. So one of the things that really excites me about, for instance, the Housing Accelerator Fund is that it's conditional funding. And I think that's one of the most effective ways of bribing a level of government that's been a real problem. Municipalities, every single level of government has been a real problem. But when you see the rollout on the Housing Accelerator Fund, actually, 2 years isn't bad, especially when you compare it with another big program that was announced in 2022, which was the 2022 budget, which was a co-op housing program, which, as Courtney well knows, has not led to anything yet, unfortunately, other than probably a good program that's waiting in the wings. So it takes time. It takes a systems approach. I'm really glad that there is conditional funding for the provinces, and if the provinces won't play ball with the municipalities, at last the federal government's realizing that it's a complex system and it takes all three levels of government. It takes a consistent infrastructure approach. The problem is, as every single person before me has said very eloquently, we don't have time for that. It's going to take a while to work out government land, even though it's something Canada has done well in the past. As Tim says, there's a long history of decay, but before that, there were some pretty cool things happening. It's going to take finance that is attached to the needs of non-market providers in order to develop either on or off government land. And that is a big problem because, as everyone says, there's a lot of risk and a lot of run-up to actually getting those grants or getting that finance. There are some huge construction and labor shortages. Modular is part of the answer. Workforce development is part of the answer. But all of these things are happening at once, otherwise it wouldn't be a crisis. The current federal government has a very limited time to do stuff. So it should be pushing out money right now. It should be pushing out, absolutely, Tim is right, emergency rent supplements to stop the literal thousands of people who are being evicted into homelessness. It also needs some work with the provinces real quick to make sure that people, you know, the inflow of evictions into homelessness somehow gets stopped. It needs, you know, if you've got a co-op program, bloody well push out that co-op program. If you've got, as Nick says, a bunch of projects that are sitting on the precipice waiting for a bit more money, get it out, because we need housing. Well, we need, you know, the best time to have had housing would be 10 years ago, and the next best time is tomorrow. We need that housing right now, or else homelessness is going to continue to grow. And that's, you know, that's the reality.
Yeah, I mean, I remember having Nick Falvo on the podcast, I think in the midst of the pandemic, and he said that at the time, he said, we won't see the worst of things till 3 years after the pandemic. And so I think we're seeing that growth that with, you know, affordability being a huge challenge. So yeah, we needed this yesterday. Courtney, thoughts on things that were not in the budget or that were concerning to you when this budget came out?
Yeah, I guess just the speed. I'm very concerned, yeah, about the speed and the timeline of things and the how those things are committed to in certain timelines. So two things that were talked about, maybe not in the budget, but maybe budget and housing plan, is the EARN dollars, the Urban Rural and Northern Indigenous Housing dollars committed to 2024. The co-op housing development program was also committed to launch in summer 2024. So we are really nose down until that happens. Like Carolyn is saying, we need those programs out now. And so we're going to be really consumed about with that for the next little while. So I think those two things are super important.
Yeah, I think without a doubt across the panel, we're hearing about speed. And I think the government must have picked up on that. Plus the fact that they have a limited time too before the next election to show some results. Tim, final thought on anything that you would hope for that's not in this budget. And then after that too, I want you to start the group on what has to happen next.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things that I think we've talked about what's not in the budget, but there's a couple of things that are in here or have been announced recently that could have a huge impact that we're not talking about or that we don't quite understand how they're going to impact. One is the capital gains tax change. 60% of the rental market is owned by smaller investors. A lot of the secondary rental market in terms of condos could be impacted. You know, I've heard people talking about those investors trying to unload some of these properties, before the June 25th deadline. We don't know what impact that could have on rental, good or bad, or on the ownership market, good or bad. I think the other piece that's unknown but could have a material impact is the changes to international students and non-permanent residents in terms of, you know, mitigating or adjusting the demand. We don't know what impact that's going to have on the rental market. And the other piece that's alluded to but not really expanded on is the issue of asylum seekers in municipal homeless shelter systems, like in Peel region, in Toronto, in, you know, Ottawa, in communities across the country. Asylum seekers are being put, they're going right from airports or where they're seeking asylum straight into the municipal homeless shelter system. What the budget talks about is helping asylum seekers avoid homelessness. If those folks are put into a dedicated resettlement system, homelessness, the profile of homelessness in cities, and particularly in Ontario, but even in Metro Vancouver, changes dramatically, dramatically, right? So that'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. But I think in terms of what's next, there's really, I think, a couple of things that are important. One is implementation, right? As everybody said, and in our sector, and for folks on this panel, I think a lot of us are going to be right on top of this government to make sure that the things that can be implemented now get implemented now. But the second thing is, you know, what this budget demonstrates and what the housing policy demonstrates is the influence that our sector and people that are concerned, people who are concerned about homelessness, people are concerned about the housing crisis, the impact that that can have on politics, right? Politics and policy moves at the speed of public opinion. And, you know, we have, I think, an opportunity now to make the upcoming election all about housing. And I'm sure that remains all about housing. And so thinking about how do we, as a sector, are about, you know, people who care about people experiencing homelessness, 35% of Canadians have either experienced homelessness themselves or know somebody who has, right? Imagine if that group was mobilized. Imagine if everybody who knows somebody or who is touched by the housing crisis demands solutions out of whichever party ends up top of the heap in the next federal election. So channeling that effort, engaging in the political process, I think is going to be a big part of what's next.
Hugely agreed. And also, listen, kudos to the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness. I know for a few elections now, you have run campaigns to make housing come to the top of mind and remind Canadians that it should be. And we've seen that. I mean, 10 years ago, going back. In fact, Tim, I can remember, I think in 2010, you came visiting York Region. We're talking about housing first. And we are so far removed from housing being top of mind for people. And now, of course, through those efforts, we see that. And it's come to fruition. In this budget, we've seen that. So the hard work is paying off, definitely. So thank you to you and the team and this entire sector for making that happen. Nick, what has to happen next, do you think? You know, Tim's talked about the speed of things. But I think from your point, from Ellis Don, kind of private sector point, what are your hopes for things happening in the next little while?
I think we need to track better on the progress. I think if implementation is the thing that we're identifying right now as the critical issue, is that we're, you know, as much as we can, looking at the success of these programs. And I think that we have a good sense with the ones that have been established thus far. I think that the innovation funding, specifically, as we kind of look at new technologies, see what is actually tracking and start following those. I mean, I think we've had a lot of experience in the past 5, 6, 7 years in looking at different things that could work on construction sites and developing housing. But I think that we really have to focus on what is impactful. And that requires tracking and data collecting and seeing what the successes of these programs are in a short period of time. And that's, I think that's just math, looking at the timelines that we have to face.
Yeah, well said. It's interesting when you talk about innovation. I can remember a few years back, I think around 2017, Innovation Fund, they had $200 million there, and they just, nothing was innovative enough. If it had been done before, it was innovative, and so no one was getting anybody out of that. So it's all around definitions, this whole budget, right? When we talk about what is affordable, what is innovation, what is moving forward. So hopefully that doesn't slow things down as well. I heard someone, we actually had someone on the podcast from Social Enterprise Canada, and she had a great quote saying, just, you know, don't confuse invention and innovation, which is very, very true. So thank you for that. Carolyn, what are your hopes for the next few months?
Well, it's a little less than 5 years since I returned to Canada from Australia. And when I got here, I'd been doing work on government use of land for non-market housing, on income categories. I was talking about zoning and building code, barriers to affordable housing, and very few other people were talking about it. So it's really, really great to see the growth of the NIMBY movement, which I still ally with myself with, the growth of an increasing understanding of how we need to reintroduce income categories that used to be there in CMHC policy and a focus on low and moderate income people that used to be there in CMHC policy, and then working policies backwards from who needs what housing, where, and at what cost. So I'm seeing a lot of advocacy from young people who are very much priced out of rental housing, priced out of ownership, and increasingly concerned about homelessness. I think we need to build on that, as Tim said. I mean, in terms of the plan itself, get the money out, show that stuff can happen, because we're heading towards an election where housing is going to be one of the number one, if not the number one issue. People are going to be looking for solutions. And if the Liberal government knows what it's doing, it's going to need to be able to show that some solutions are working. The Conservatives can't just come in to the election saying, "Oh, government sucks," and you know, all we need to do is get rid of all government, because I don't think that voters are going to say, "But what about homelessness? But what about affordable housing?" And the NDP is going to have to come up with a perhaps an even more bold and even more progressive vision. And I'd really, as Tim says, like, when I lived in Australia, there was a fellow named Peter Newman, a noted environmentalist. And he said, whoever gets elected in this next election, he was actually talking about the state of West Australia, they're going to have to build a train line. And that's where we're at right now in terms of public advocacy. I would love it if whoever gets elected in the next election, there's going to have to be some bold moves for deeply affordable housing. And I think it's up to us to advocate for that.
Well said. I will say this too. You had me thinking along the lines there, is that there wasn't any talk, to my knowledge, of homelessness prevention in this budget, which I think individuals like Stephen Gates, who's been really pushing for that, and Melanie Redmond for years, not a lot of talk about prevention. So we can't, you know, ending homelessness, you've got to stop the flow in. Now, of course, if you
there's a kind of Bill of Rights, which again, you know, is as long as a piece of string. We'll have to see what's actually in it. But that's actually new. And it's happened before in Canada's history in the 70s and the 40s that tenant rights was taken on by the federal government. Let's see it happen again.
Yes, let's hope. I mean, again, Tim mentioned this early on, when you're dealing with egos and provinces, and this is my territory, you're stepping on some egos as we move forward. Let's talk about, speaking about provinces, Ontario. Andrew, right now, as you speak, you are with your board, AMFA. What are you talking about? I mean, I'm sure the budget's come up. What are your hopes for your membership, and what are people around that table talking about moving forward?
Yeah, no, I think I spoke to it earlier around just getting the stuff deployed. And I think the one thing we can do and we should do is, based on the fact that this whole roundtable of folks had so much influence on just the written policy, here's the budget, here's the ideas, we should use our influence to actually help them with the actual mechanisms and processes to get this stuff going. So I think there's an obligation for us in our sector, not just to advocate on that front end side, but to also influence how this stuff gets moving. Because I find that sometimes that's the issue, is to Carolyn's point a moment ago, you had a policy that was kicking around since 2017. Mike, you said it about other monies that were supposed to be deployed, but it was too innovative to be innovative, and nothing got released. I think sometimes when you get into policy, it gets written down, because that's what that policymaker or that academic can do. And they're out there, they wrote it up, it sounds so good, and they stop. They're like, "Oh, I don't even know how to make this move." So I think we as associations, and especially here at ANFA, we want to use the exact same advocacy influence we had to also influence the actual movement and mechanisms of the process to get this stuff going. We can't just look at the milestones that were laid out in the budget. We got to be able to go back to the government and almost restart that conversation that we had earlier to get to this point around the budget. We'll start saying, okay, how do we get this going? And you know what? 3 years isn't going to cut it, but here's how we can get it going. And that's all orders of government, ensuring that we're talking to municipalities, we're talking to our province, and we're making all this coordinated thing flow so that it's hitting the right people, which is the community housing provider. Because I think that's the biggest thing we can do, is influence process. And I think we've done a great job with advocacy. It's time for us to start telling people, this is actually how you can get this stuff flowing without complexity.
Well said. Thank you for that. So we're going to start our last round. Courtney, I'm going to give you a chance to say like what your hopes are moving forward. And on top of that, start us with where can people find out more about the work that you are doing if they want to get involved? So has that been moving forward, and where can they learn more about your work?
Yeah, sure. We do lots of kind of roundups of what we think, what we think of budgets and provinces putting out work on our website, so chfcanada.coop, also on Twitter or X at CHF Canada. And I think I'm really excited, we all kind of touched on this, but to use this budget like as a political document now. It's given us, I think, a lot of space, and I think we can use it to continue to put pressures on other places. So on the provincial premiers and ministers, on mayors as well, and really tell them all that we need to work together on this. I think the minister, Sean Fraser himself, said nobody wants to listen to politicians argue about jurisdiction. And they've been doing quite a bit of that even recently. And so I think this is going to really give us space to say we don't have time for that. And the prime minister himself said, you know, the housing plan is everybody asked for federal leadership. Here it is. And so we got to make sure we use all of that space that this is creating to push forward on all these components.
Yes, thank you for that. Yeah, and an example of the, you know, governments not working together, and Tim mentioned this, I believe, is with asylum seekers, when we saw municipal governments saying, hey, we don't have the money to do this, and the federal government saying, we've already given you money through the provinces to do so, and so nothing happened. And so who suffered? And then faith community stepped up without a background in housing and supporting people, but someone had to. And so it became very, very messy. And the worry from the municipality is, if we do it, then they'll say, see, you could do it. You didn't need extra money. Then you come to a standstill. So we need all that kind of minutia to go away and people to work together, because the need is now. Carolyn, you're putting out research and on different panels all the time. If people want to find out more about the work you're doing, where can they go?
Well, I'm active, almost too active, on both LinkedIn and the artist formerly known as Twitter. And I want to give a shout out before the end of this hour to Tim's work, but also to the work of several of us here who've been involved in the Accord and then the Blueprint for More and Better Housing. And I think that, you know, there's some really great ideas there that have been taken up with alacrity by this government. I think that change starts with some good ideas that are well advocated for. I take hope from the fact that the Nova Scotia government had a housing affordability task force under a Liberal government. And then when the Conservative government came in, they started rolling out those recommendations. I mean, Courtney's nodding, co-op funding and acquisitions fund, some really exciting work with, for instance, Black-led community housing. So I think, and we've been touching on this a few times, that good housing programs are infrastructure programs. They can't be, they shouldn't be political in that capital P kind of way. Of course, it's all political, but, you know, like, it shouldn't be associated with a particular party. It needs all three levels of government working together, and it needs to happen over like 30 years of time. And there's no recent government in Canada that's lasted its 30 years. So it needs a level of consensus. So, you know, that's where I'm most hopeful slash really want to work on that, because I think it takes a big tent to make this happen, and I want to be part of that big tent. Oh, I should also mention, I've got a book coming out in October called Home Truths, Fixing Canada's Housing Crisis. If you Google that in my name, it's UBC On Point Press. That's my personal plug. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for that. We're going to go same question. Tim, you've got different webinars coming up. The Canadian Alliance is doing so many different things. Where could people go to find out more? What's going on?
Yeah, well, come drop by our website, caeh.ca, and find out more about some of the things we're doing, and sign up to join us. I think, I was listening to a political podcast the other day. I listened to this one and another one, just two. But the one of the points was made was that, you know, low-income people don't vote. If low-income people don't vote, or the people that care about them don't vote, or the people that care about housing issues and housing policy, if we don't get active and we don't vote, we get steamrolled, right? Homelessness is a product of policy, right? And policy moves at the speed of public opinion. And if the votes aren't there for policies to resolve the things we care about and to protect the people we care about, then the people we care about are going to get the short end of that policy stick. So I think you've shown collectively that we can influence the processes and policies that impact us, right? And so if we organize, if we get together, we can move public opinion and solve the issues that hurt the people we care about, right? And it is possible because we've shown, and we're showing that we can do it. And that's going to be, you know, a big part of our focus. So come find out more, sign up, join us. We're gearing up for this next election, and be working with a lot of our partners here around the table to make that happen.
Amazing. And so grateful for all the work you and the team are doing. In fact, it was interesting and timely. I had a mayor reach out, and he was really concerned, wants to do better around encampments. And I said, well, I've got a webinar for you to attend. So thank you for that. And you're absolutely right. I mean, come on. I like to think that the people on this podcast right now, including the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness, really, this budget is a testament to what you can do, you know, if you rally people and get behind it. Your voice matters for sure. Carolyn, to your point too, I think there's countries that have, if you look at, I mean, everyone always talks about Finland, but for a reason. This is different governments over different years, they all kind of stuck to, they didn't, it wasn't political, to your point of, hey, housing is something that really matters to our economy, to our people, to human lives, and no matter who's in power, the focus has got to stay there. So I meant to say that when you're talking about that, for sure. Andrew, where can people find out more about the work you're doing at ONFA? What are you up to?
Yeah, no, it's onfa.on.ca. So onpha.on.ca, nice and short. We got an annual conference coming up in the fall. We have a variety of webinars and other activities that you can register through the website on. A lot of work for our active members. We're actually in the midst of deploying some grant funding to help with some of the issues Nick was outlining around those upfront costs and transitional costs for members that are moving out of their current agreements with their service managers and their municipality to new ones. So a little bit of that due diligence work, we've unlocked some money through the Ontario government to help our members with that. So pretty proud of that. But, you know, overarchingly, we're going to keep doing the same stuff we've been doing, which is really try to influence, you know, the advocacy stuff. We've seen it. We've done the advocacy. We've gotten our outcomes. But right now, as I said, we're not going to rest on it. We're not going to have a tea party and get excited around the announcements. We're gonna go right back to the table with various levels of the government and keep talking about how to make this stuff come to life, because our providers needed it yesterday. We'll say we need it today. So I think that's what we're up to in the near future.
And don't forget, you have a podcast. So tell us about that. Plug it here.
We do. I appreciate you, man. Opening Doors is our podcast. We're on coming up to episode 4 or so. I think we have to do a cross poly on one of these, Michael. It'd be nice branding and everything else. So I'll talk to Marlene about that. But you can, anywhere you traditionally stream, we have our impressions on LinkedIn. So you can definitely see us on LinkedIn when we release it. But if you're on Spotify, Apple Music, all those places, we're there for consumption. So yeah, I appreciate you reminding me. I knew it was in one of my notes here, but I try to not look at the notes. So I thank you for the reminder on the plug, and definitely check it out. We just released an episode about last week. So please consume it. We'd love it.
Yeah, it's well produced, a great listen. So please do. And Nick, you know, you're talking about 2019, Ellis Don, largest builder in Canada. But in 2019, what you're vice president of community builders, right? And really helping nonprofits. And I'm going to say like Blue Door, who say, we have land we want to build. We have no idea what we're doing when it comes to development. You step up and you've kind of done development for dummies for Blue Door. You keep, you know, and my team excluded from that. I'm talking about myself. but you've helped us move a project along. This is the chance to talk a little bit about Community Builders. Where can people find out more about the work that you're doing across Canada?
Sure thing, but I think Blue Door deserves more credit than that. You guys are great. So to learn more about our group, it's capital.elliston.com. And I think what you'll see there is what Michael's alluding to is that in 2019, we took our, you know, we were generally an infrastructure developer, and we took a good chunk of our infrastructure professionals to focus exclusively on affordable housing. And it's quite evident on the website when you go there. And what I've learned along the way, it's been quite inspiring to be part of this space, because I think that a lot of our work, you know, will survive election cycles and political cycles and things like that. And the amount of collaboration and partnerships, specifically between nonprofit and for-profit organizations trying to figure out this problem, whether it's through development itself or through advisory or through collaboration or even construction innovation, it's been pretty monumental. And I think that we should all give ourselves a great amount of credit. And we live in a federal state where there's a good distribution of legislative power across the different governments. And while they figure that out, you know, this panel's here to keep going with that work. And just, I'm incredibly grateful to be part of this panel.
Thanks for that, Nick. I have to tell this group, about 6 months ago, we were talking to a not to be named government group about money for a new project Blue Door was working on. And when they didn't have any, they said to me, have you thought about fundraising? We've come a long way since then to this budget with a lot of hope beyond fundraising, which most groups have leaned on. This is exciting times. And I think everyone can agree what we have here coming out of this budget is a little momentum. And it's up to us and everyone involved to make sure we don't let that stall. We continue to push, because as many of you have said, the need was yesterday. The need was 10 years ago. We have this momentum. Let's move on it now. You're incredibly busy people. Grateful for all you do in this sector. Thank you all for making the time today to come chat about this with us on the pod.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you all.
Great to be with you all.
Thanks, Michael.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com. Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.